meeting of Port of Port Townsend to order. Pledge of allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, so we'll start with the approval of the agenda. Are there any additions or corrections to the agenda? Hearing none, I move that we approve the agenda. All in favor?
Aye.
Consent agenda. Okay, on the consent agenda, I found a thing in the minutes that I think was, needs a little bit of clarification. And whoops, it's in here. On number 567, section B, that was where we're talking about the IT contract. At the end, it was stated at the last meeting that Larry was going to go out for an RFP, but that didn't get put in here. We obviously changed that, but my understanding at the end of the last meeting is that Larry decided he didn't feel comfortable doing this and was going to go.
I didn't say it in the meeting.
Did you say that right at the end of this?
He sent an email.
He sent an email out the next day that after that was uncomfortable.
Okay, well,
we'll
correct my correction then.
Okay.
But then going further down, and not having got to do with the minutes then, I noticed a couple of things in the operations reports that made me want to ask about it here in the session. And one is that Point Hudson nightly moorage, nightly visits seems to be down by like about 500, which is a considerable amount, considering that this is supposedly an upturn. So I was wondering if that could be attributed to anything that anyone can think of specifically as rather than just a general malaise. And also I noticed at the airport, the nightly tie-downs were like up almost double. And I was wondering if anyone, you know, I mean, obviously these are accurate numbers, but if anyone has any ideas as to what's causing those two interesting trends that I found abnormal.
Well, it's looking at Point Hudson right now compared to 2014 to 2013 is what you're saying.
Well, and all the rest of them too, going back to 2010 even. 2010 was like right after the recession, and it was like 4,000 nightly visits compared to 600 visits less.
Okay, I was looking at the monthly comparisons.
I think we have two things working there from an operations point of view. One is, and we typically see this when weather is good, people don't stay in Point Hudson. They go on to the San Juans. If the weather is bad, they tend to stay close to Seattle.
Oh.
I don't know if that's happening here. The other thing is we raised the rates this year, and I am hearing some grumbling at $1.25 a foot. We went from $1 to $1.25. That might adjust itself, but I think a rate change has affected some of the occupancy.
And so that rate change then went into effect
last year.
Okay. Well, that would explain that.
And I think, you know, when you get a lot of good weather and the water's calm out here, the weekender type visits, a lot of them will anchor off and save more money.
And then has anything happened out of the airport to bring more people in? Like, has the pie got better or something?
It's just good weather.
It's good weather, huh? Yes. Okay.
Good flying weather.
There were a couple, I mean, there's, I know Scotty had a couple planes that were tied down for a long chunk of time.
That he's working on.
Yeah, that are now gone.
Well, he has a plane he just bought, too. He just bought his 150 that he keeps tied up. Okay. So that's going to increase our revenue.
Okay.
We're not talking a lot of revenue with tie downs.
No, I know.
Yeah, but I saw that it was more activity, and I wondered if that portends more activity in the airport overall. Or
well, I will say I had breakfast at the Spruce Goose 2 weekends ago, and Chris was saying that this is the best year ever.
Really?
That they've had.
So that had nothing to do with us. I mean, we didn't do anything right to make it happen. That was just
again. I think a lot of it is the good weather this summer. A lot of people flying in, you know, for breakfast and lunch and that sort of thing. But we've also seen an increase in military activity, where the chopper pilots just put down and go and have a pie, and you know, just it's a friendly place to fly into.
One of the things I wanted to get information on, and I didn't on Point Hudson, is we have more commercial space now than we did. We've taken on a couple other boats and some commercial people on the linear dock. So I wanted, before the meeting, to get in and delve into how much more commercial space versus transient space, and I didn't get to do that. But I can find out some other answers for you.
Okay.
Yeah, we gave away a couple of slips as part of the Fish and Wildlife contract.
Oh, that's true.
It's not counted. We're getting actually more money because we're getting constant revenue day in and day out from Fish and Wildlife, but it's not counted as night and morgue.
Right.
And those are fine transient slips.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so any other comments on the consent agenda? Okay, so I move that we can approve the consent agenda.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Okay, public comments not related to the agenda. There's two of you in here. What do you want to
talk about? Outreach. Oh, I think I'd like to see the trend in overnight tie downs increase, and I think the only way to get those things to increase is to make transportation more available, make information about what's in town more available, because people aren't going to stay overnight to come and have lunch at the Spruce Goose, as good as that is. Get those overnight tie downs up also means more money in the city businesses' cash registers too. So
that's if they can get to town.
Big pardon?
That's if they can get to town.
Yes, that's the big issue. That's something that I've been working on trying to get going. Jefferson Transit has no interest. I've talked to Rocket. They kind of see it as a possibility, but they're not sure how to make it happen.
There's a gym car for sale for $3,000 in town. I say that because, you know, Kingston, the Port of Kingston, has a gym car that they bought, and it's so successful they just leave it at their docks there, and they let people drive to Kingston and back, take it and use it. I'm not sure if a gym car would be suitable for transportation on the highway. It probably wouldn't, actually.
They have a little bit of a problem, though. They have to go up to one of the local taverns and find it.
Oh, they do?
Because the guy from the marina up to the tavern, he's in there passed out, so they have to go reconfiscate it periodically.
Kingston.
I mean, that really happens?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, well, good to know.
Yeah, the other challenge at the airport, this is something we've been working through the RTPO, is it's very dangerous and difficult to get in and out of the airport, you know, for like a transit bus, especially if you're trying to turn left to come back towards town. And, you know, that's something that we've talked for years, you know, but it's pretty low on the priority as far as getting a turn lane and widening. And you know, we've offered our property to accommodate widening of the road. But if people just don't like going out there, if there's not a lot of business to justify it. So,
any other public comments, Joe?
I mean, I'm not an airport guy, but I do know that local taxis aren't very expensive. They're pretty reasonable. So, I mean, as far as getting people in here, we've always got to have a lot of money, you know, if it's just advertised more, if here's how you get a taxi. But just to follow up on what we talked about last time about liability insurance for the patrons, for boat owners, I've called around, and anybody that wants to complain about needing insurance, it's $50 to $100 a year. I don't think I found anybody that's more than $100 a year for 300,000 liability. So we've gone much more in-depthly into any customer that calls me that wants me to book his appointment with the port or anything like that. We go over everything. You're going to have this. You're going to have this. I haven't had anybody that's gone, holy, you know, I mean, they've all got it. For most of my customers, they're already carrying that insurance. It's not an issue. And for the most part, any of the little Hughes Crafts or any of that, I talked to Jim and called a couple places, they're in the same spot. If your home insurance doesn't cover it, I believe the homeowner's insurance, it came up, it will only cover something up to like 16 feet. It was a fairly small, you know, so your 22-foot Hughes Crafts and all that, but everything I've dealt with so far, they're currently carrying that insurance. So it just hasn't been an issue at all.
Yeah, that's what Shannon telling me the other day that either they already have it or it's such a low cost they don't mind.
And Jim Alpin actually has been extremely helpful in just directing people properly and getting the basics. And it's just not nearly as much of an issue, I think, as everybody was hoping it
would be. Well, what's helped too is the recent legislation that was passed by the state. Now a lot of the private, well, everybody's being required to have a minimum of $300,000 for mortgage. Well, that same insurance covers you in the yard, so. Yeah.
And I think that was part of it too, is I don't know that it was fully understood that your dockside minimal coverage insurance, which any marina is going to require, covers all of that. And it, you know, theoretically, if you're currently in this marina, it shouldn't be an issue because you're carrying that insurance anyway. So that's just a follow up.
Cool.
Any other public comments? Okay. All right, then we'll go on to the second reading of the action items we're going to take action on, and the first one is the IT contract.
As we just touched on, after the last meeting, I was a little despondent over some of the comments. And I talked over Jim and Amy and Eric, and at one point I was ready just to recommend that we, we go on the street, see what kind of people responded. But there are so few of these entities locally that provide this kind of service. Anybody from outside, from Seattle or Bremerton or other places, $20,000 is a pretty damn good deal. And I don't know if we would get any better service, and we'd probably end up paying a lot more money. And so we went back, Amy modified the contract based on the comments at the last time. And I really feel confident that for a one-year contract, this is a good deal, and I think it'll help because this will give us the ability to plan. We'll know how much service we're getting, when we're gonna get it. I can have Kevin Ellis, our communications guy, come in and meet with the IT guy because we've got some issues there, you know, who's responsible for what. But we'll be able to plan that. And if it doesn't work, then at the end of the year, we can try something different. But at this point in our IT stage, I think this is the right thing to do. So I don't know if you want to add anything.
Not really.
So I recommend give me authority to sign the contract.
So what got changed other than they took out the part that didn't, that referred to port server, to school district servers? Change the termination for breach?
We didn't change.
I left that alone. The 90
that's
day.
That's their standard that they use for all of their districts, fire, school, everybody.
Basically, the only thing it changed was you took out the part that didn't apply to us.
Right.
We took out Appendix B and we modified Appendix A to say PPT instead of district.
And you did that, not them.
I did it and sent it to him for approval because it was easier for me to put in the changes that you wanted. So, he would have done it.
Yeah, district. So because we're a district, they do a lot of school districts. That's why they use the word district. But
my point last time was not that I couldn't understand what they were trying to say. But I could. The point was that. It might be reminiscent of their work, but they kind of, this will be good enough. We'll just cross this out. And that would be indicative of how they maybe
do their a little more for us. So.
And the last one was just a draft. It wasn't meant. I mean, I probably jumped the gun on bringing it the last time.
So we have a motion to approve this contract?
I make the motion.
Just approve it.
All in favor?
Aye.
And anytime we meet with them, if any one of you want to sit down, feel free to.
Lost one of the other time. Joe.
What is the entity that you're hiring? Just what's the company you're hiring? Just for my notes.
The Olympic Educational Service District out of Bremerton.
Thank you.
And they have that name. They provide this similar service for a lot of the school districts.
Okay, so the second action item is the organizational chart.
Jim. Again, last meeting, we presented an org chart for you for your review. We've spent a lot of this year working with the managers to try to figure out the most efficient way to manage staff and without just blatantly hire new person for the yard, new person for maintenance, new person for mortgage. So managers have come together quite well, and you know, we've got one person split between environmental and maintenance now, which is great, and another person that's picking up that maintenance halftime position and helping Doug in the yard. So those three departments are working very well together. The missing piece to the puzzle was health and customer service. We have two full-time operations to manage, plus we have to do grossing. With four people, six days a week, if we have one person sick or one person on vacation, we can't meet those deadlines and duties. Also, with the addition of Union Wharf and City Dock, which take quite a bit of time, the new House Bill 2457, and I don't know if you've read the whole bill, but it's going to require us to do a lot more documenting and make available our records to the Department of Revenue.
The entire village.
So they're putting the onus on the our mortgage people to gather more information, catalog some information, and make it available to the departments. And coupled with, you know, now we're really pushing mortgage to look at parking issues. So they're going around the parking lot twice a day and seeing if they see another car. So we just seem to keep adding things on their plate, and we feel it's finally time to add that 0.6 FTE to mortgage. And I say 0.6 because we already have three summer help. If we do this full-time change, we won't do two summer help. So that won't change that one position in the summer. So that's what we're asking for.
So I guess I understand what you're saying. And I understand, I'm looking at this thing in front of me, but I guess I'm not sure how I can make this sheet that you gave me understand how many people we have working at mortgage staff, how many FTEs. I mean, I see
that. Well, there's the harbor master, and yeah, then there's the assistant harbor master, and right now we have two customer service reps. We've added one other customer service rep, so that's three on this proposed chart. And then below that, we have two seasonal that we're proposing. Right now, if you looked at last year's chart, it would have two customer service reps below the assistant harbor master and three seasonal.
Okay, and so how do I equate which ones of those are full-time and which ones are like 0.6 and 0.5 and 0.4 or whatever? Well,
they're all full-time, but you see, but the seasonal.
Right.
The seasonal is only May through September.
That's a, what, 10? 6? You
mentioned 0.4. 0.4 is what a summer help is equivalent to a 0.4.
On the maintenance where you're sharing a facilities maintenance guy, so that would mean that last one there, the facilities main should actually be a half of the facilities main on maintenance and a half on the environmental one?
Well, you could do that, but what Larry Ozzie and Doug have decided to do is on an as-needed basis. They're working really well. Some days Charlie will work 2 days in the yard, some days he'll work 3 days, three days in the yard, depending on the workload. You know, sometimes Doug's really busy and Larry's not. Sometimes Larry's really busy and Doug's not. So they've taken that person and kind of moved him around. That's why the beauty of this is we didn't have to hire a new yard person. We were able to use existing staff to fill in those gaps.
So if I was trying to figure out using this, how many full-time employees we have, I really couldn't.
You could. Did 20?
Everybody's full-time except for the seasonal.
Well, no, I see facilities maintenance under environmental compliance are the last one, and I see the facilities maintenance under maintenance staff, so that would tell me you're that's saying that's a half.
Well, it's a half in each, so it's one.
Yeah, but
every block is one full-time person.
Every line within the block.
So that assistant environmental compliance facilities maintenance works half-time for two departments, but it's one full-time employee.
So that's just a new block then that got put in there.
Right.
I get it. Okay.
So I have a question. Was Doug able to fill Jimmy's position?
So what we did is we have some good guys in the yard, and he was able to promote TJ, which was really great. So TJ went out to lift off too, and we hired Christian to be a yard laborer.
Yeah.
So we were able to fill that gap with Christian as a summer help.
Right.
By union contract, we have to post internally, and we did. No one wanted that job, so Christian.
Cool.
Now, do we want to talk with Eric brought up this morning about maybe a part-time engineer?
Yeah.
The port used to have an engineer on staff. back when they were doing a heavy haul out back in the late 90s. I think he was only part-time then. And
Bob was full-time for 8 months.
Yeah, right during the height of the shipyard expansion. And then, by the time I got here, the position had been, eliminated. So I don't know if we feel there's enough of a need to bring somebody on, like we do with Eric, not a full-time. You know, if we hired out to an engineer firm to do this work for us, it'd probably cost us $100,000 or more. You could bring on a part-time engineer for a lot less than that for a year or two. So I don't know if it's worth it.
Well, I think we can go at this. I mean, I assume you're talking about a risk assessment for some of our infrastructure, such as what Eric mentioned about the breakwater here at the commercial basin and so on. I think we can look at it as a kind of common sense standpoint and determine which ones would really benefit from having a PE come in and evaluate it. Like, he's talking about the toe of the slope out there on that breakwater, right, with the old piling that's holding up the toe of the slope, and determine how is that going to be evaluated and determine is this something needs to be, addressed next year or 10 years from now. And, there's a lot of these other items we don't need an engineer for. Like, obviously, we see the shingles are blowing off the roofs at Point Hudson, that's a no-brainer. But as far as trying to prioritize some of these maintenance items, I think that maybe if we could just have a list from Larry Ozzie, which ones
we triage ourselves for,
and then determine which ones really would benefit from having a PE look at it.
So is there such thing as a part-time engineer that will come on?
Well, you can read anything as a part-time, mm-hmm, to do a part-time return. there's probably a lot of engineers that are retired that wouldn't mind coming back for some time. But
we already have one. Tyke. I mean, he's not an engineer, but
he's not really. This would have to be somebody that actually has the legal, the wet stamp. But
I like Brad's approach.
Yeah, and that would work fine. So. But I just thought since we've been talking about it,
I think it'd be useful to really get a handle on our capital expenses.
All right. In that case, staff would recommend that you approve the org chart as presented so that we can.
I make a motion
to approve the chart.
I'll second that.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Okay. Potentially staff comments.
Do you get anything?
No.
Amy?
Do not.
Just an update on the Point Hudson breakwater. The hydrographic survey was done. Eric alluded to it. We did find some problems in the hydrographic survey. It seems that the military back in the 50s or 60s or whenever, when they rebuilt the breakwater, they just took the riprap and just shoved it off the end, which is going to be right where we're going to be trying to drive sheet piles. So the engineers are looking at that, trying to figure out, can we get around this riprap? It's in about 50 feet of water. Eelgrass survey is being done right now as we speak. Amy Liebman's doing that for us. Clark Land Office was up doing a foot upland survey. The Allison is done with the biological assessment, and we're still hoping to be in permitting by December 1. So we're fast-tracking everything, trying to get everything together. You all still need a conceptual drawing of the breakwater as the engineers come up with it, and Shane's hoping to have that for you in the next 30 days for you to review. The airport, Bill and I met with the contractor yesterday. Great guy, it seems like. Not common sense, if we don't need to do that, let's not do that. Let's save money and do this. So he's coming back to us with some other numbers. Looks like we can save a little more money than we even thought. So this company, even though they're in Olympia, it's all they do is public works jobs. So they don't do houses, they don't do buildings. They make their bread and butter in public works, so he knows the real numbers.
Two or three things here. Got a call from State Parks. Talked to the lady, Quentin Foam Tag, for a few days. the state is going to try to do something. She doesn't have the details to stabilize the road up on the bluff above our beach. And according to this lady, if the project will, quote, encumber our property, meaning the beach down below. Because remember, that's about a 80 to 100 foot bluff right there. So she's going to get with the engineer, have the engineer either call me or email me with the details. She thought it included riprap, and I said, well, it, you know, changes the topography of our sandy beach, which, and explain to her, we leave it open for the public, we don't charge anything there. We could have some issues, and I impressed upon her that anything that would encumber our property needs to come to the Port Commission for our approval and say on it. So, more to follow on that as soon as I get it. I'll put it back on the agenda to show that to you.
So, excuse me, while we're still on that, what's happening? Is the road falling off?
It's sliding on the board and board. I haven't heard anything about the road.
No, but the bank's sloughing a bit. So they're concerned that they need to stabilize it.
And this is where? Is it at the high point or the low point? I mean,
yes.
Yeah.
It sounds like they're going to stabilize that entire bluff.
Right.
Yeah. You know, it goes
right
down.
Behind the stairs. And,
yeah. But as soon as I get some details, I'll pass it on to you. RCO, we got the dates for the formal scoring of their grant applications for the boat ramp. It's the 24th and 25th. It'll be all day Wednesday and Thursday.
What month?
This month.
This month?
Week after next. Which means I will not be here for the next commission meeting. I'll be in Olympia for those 2 days. And our scheduled briefing is on the 25th, on Thursday.
You're going to have that first thing in the morning.
So, that'll be the official scoring, the results of which will be known to the committee members probably by the end of October. And then we'll have to wait for the legislature to determine how much money is going to be available in that pot of money, which could be, you know, it's a long session, might be May before we actually know if we're going to get any money or not. The last thing, some years ago we did a salary survey. Number of ports are doing this, and staff is thinking maybe it's time that we kind of update our salary survey. This would be within my spending limit, but we're talking to the guy that did it before. I just want to let you know that I'm looking at doing that. You know, last time we did this, we found that every one of our positions except one was significantly below the industry standard. We did some adjustments, but still below standard, and with the economy and CPI moving every year, I'm sure we're still way below, but I think it might be with us negotiating a union contract and everything else, something we may want to do. So that's all I have.
That could. Last meeting, the commissioners directed us to make some changes to the Scalvay lease to reflect changes to the stormwater system. This is what Eric and Carolyn put together. So I wanted you to be aware of the changes that were made to that lease before it was approved. And it basically says he's going to put gutters up and replace the media when Al tells him it's time to replace the media.
So they already approved it pending.
Pending right. That change. Yeah. I just wanted you to see the actual change in the lease.
That's it.
Okay, Commission, let's see, public comments. Joe.
I hate to harken back to something that's a pain in the butt, but with the independent contractor thing that we went through this morning, I'm in a weird position because I'm a PTMTA board member, so I'm supposed to be there for our constituency, but at the same time, I'm a business owner. And so I would just like to just give a word of encouragement possibly for the PTMTA and the port to maybe start to work a little bit tighter together to figure out how to figure this thing out, because otherwise it's just going to be a pain in the butt, and it's a huge issue, I think, from someone who makes $6,000 a year. I fully understand not being able to afford a high insurance rate, but at the same time, as a business owner, to be able to have someone come up behind you and say, well, I can do that for 20 bucks an hour because I don't pay all this stuff. I'm in a yin and a yang situation. So I guess my comment is I would really encourage maybe some fast tracking of the PTMTA and the port working together to try to figure this out. Otherwise, I think this could be a huge burr in the butt of everybody for a while. So I'd like to just encourage us to move forward as quickly as possible on settling that issue. That's it.
Bill?
Did somebody on staff go to the airport manager's WashDOT dealio?
The airport manager went.
And what up with that, dude?
It was kind of their generic briefing on upcoming grant cycles, how much money is going to be available, but also some regulatory changes that are coming down the pike. And it was a good session. Nothing unexpected that is going to really change anything we're doing. The biggest thing is we've got to make sure future projects are in the state capital improvement project list and the FAAs, which is the CIP, just the CIP, that no more of these last minute, oh, I forgot, we want to do this too kind of thing. The money is really, really tight. And it's interesting, I got the data, I can show it to you. They showed nationwide the amount of money spent by states per aircraft within their state. And this is on infrastructure type things. And we're in the bottom five. States like Louisiana, which are relatively poor as states go, are spending like $8,500 a year for aircraft on infrastructure, whereas we're spending like $200.
$200 a year?
Yeah.
As opposed to $8,500?
Yeah, how other states are able to fund their airports, and we're not. And the last thing is, if you're going to put a pole up 25 feet or higher, you've got to get clearance. It appears the Met towers, the meteorological environmental towers, are causing a lot of safety issues, not just in this state, but nationwide. These are the towers that potential wind farms are putting up to test the wind to see, over a long period of time, how often the wind blows above a certain speed and all that. Well, the trouble is, they've just been throwing these towers up without any FAA clearance or notifying local airports or anything else. So for whatever reason, the state legislature picked 25 feet as the height that you've got to get permission and notify airports in your region and everything
else. Crop dusters.
Yes.
Yeah, it's for that sort of reason. Yes. They got some other things. Like I said, well, I just put a power pole up that's 30 feet. Well, if it's surrounded by 100-foot trees, then you're okay, but you got to still build.
The law that Huntingford put forward applied to guide the towers, or guide antenna structures, and it exempted utility, and there's a whole bunch of exemptions, and it was pretty specifically tailored to get at those, kind of come and put up a Met tower for a wind farm at the end of a crop row kind of thing. So it's going to kind of catch a lot of people in that rubric, but it's guide towers that they're after. So a pole or something like that that's like that gets put up, they don't seem to care as much about because of the fixed that we have.
But it's all within the meeting.
Commissioner comments.
I need to get an excuse from you two commissioners. I am gone the first commission meeting of October. So
I think that's inexcusable.
So
well, it depends on what it's for.
Yeah. I'm going to goof off. So there you go.
No, and that's okay with me.
Yeah.
It's in the first one in October?
Yeah.
You can Skype in.
Nothing.
No,
not from where he's going.
Europe, so I won't be able to Skype in. So hopefully he'll give you that. Secondly, so, you know, going back to the independent contractor discussion, it would be interesting. I mean, my sense is that Joni doesn't really know how many people are coming in. She's just pulling numbers out of the air. And so I would like to figure that out. I mean, maybe that's the first step that the port and the PTMTA tries to understand is, you know, how many people are coming in and working, and how many of them are incidental? You know, how many of them are coming in on a specific job and then leaving?
The picture she painted today got me even more concerned about our liability.
I can't imagine that there are 300 people working around the yard that the port does not know about.
Right.
I agree with you as far as the numbers may have just been thrown out there. But I mean, everyone that I can think of off the top of my head that, and I don't subcontract. I have one time in 7 years subcontracted with one guy and I 1099. But that was it.
It was 1099, you mean? Made him an employee?
Yeah. So I had to cover, but I mean, he was there for 2 days, you know, and that was it, and he got paid, and I covered his LMI and all that. And so it was a really simple process for me because I've only done it once. But in general, I don't think there's that many people. And the people that I see working around, Dan Radden that does glass work, the mobile fuel polishing guy, Mike, that comes in and does that, those guys are all legitimate businesses that carry insurance and stuff anyway. I think where the issue lies, and you know, this is just a general term, the train jumper kids that come in during the summer and a bunch of guys hire them to do grunt labor on their boats, that's a very difficult thing to try to control or try to regulate. None of those kids are going to sign in with the port, you know, but they're still picking up work here and there, which I haven't seen as much of in the last couple of years as I have prior to that. But I mean, I fully understand that as a person that pays rent to the port, I would hate for my rent to go up because of the fact that people are not carrying insurance and there's lawsuits being brought against the port. I would hate to see my prices go up because other people aren't following specific rules. I mean, for example, when I was working for the port and doing side work, I still carried insurance. The port came to me and said, look, if you're going to do this, this is what you got to do. So I did. And it wasn't harsh. It wasn't. I think the key to the whole independent contractor thing is to do a lot more research. I have several insurance agents that I deal with that I can call and ask them, look, what are the options for a guy that comes in here for the summer and he's working for 3 months and picking up work? What are his options? You know, because you know he's not going to pay $2,000 insurance or $1,500 insurance. But at the same time, like I say, as a business owner, I'm on the other side of it too, going, well, I hate getting underbid by guys that don't have to follow the same rules I do, and losing work. That just last week, I just lost a job to a person that I don't know whether they carry a business license, whether they carry insurance, I don't know any of that. But it was a fairly decent sized job that I had allotted time and staff for that then just went away because he found somebody that cost less. And I'm sure part of the reason for that is because there's not the same parameters for that person that there is for me. I don't want to deny that person work. But at the same time, if you're going to compete with businesses that do all of this, then there's got to be some parity in that, you know, you've got to pay something, even if you're a small guy. So I will agree to call my insurance agents and just ask them, what options do these people have? Because they've got to have something. But I fully understand their point of, I can't afford to pay what you pay as a business that's here year-round with employees and all of that. So I'll just put my two cents in and say that I will do some research before the next commission meeting and find out if I can find out what the options are. And on behalf of the PTMTA, too, for our constituents.
Thanks, Joe.
Any
other questions?
So last meeting I asked you about looking into our labor, I mean, not our labor, but our insurance pool in regards to possibly having some options to cover for independents and so on.
Yeah, that, in fact, Ralph and I talked about that a little bit too. Indoors, since it is a pool, you know, they don't want one member taking on additional liability because it affects all the members of the pool. But I don't know, I'm afraid to even suggest this, you know, if we were to take out a different policy that didn't affect the other members. It might not, if they don't offer it, I don't know if another insurance broker would offer it. That would provide us additional coverage should there be a third-party lawsuit.
Mm-hmm.
That's something we haven't explored yet. But Endorse, and you've talked to Endorse, I don't see that as an option. Yeah, we can explore if there's other policies, but, you know, is that something we're willing to pay for?
Well, there's an NNTA conference going on real soon. Which
November.
One? That's one in Bremerton, isn't it?
Yeah, it's November.
Is that November?
Yeah, I think it's the first week in November.
Yeah, well, anyway, I mean, they're like the big Marine Trades Association, and since Griswold and those guys were looking into this, they were looking at it in the 2003s and 4s, weren't they, about then? I mean, there's a lot of things that have changed in 10 years in the insurance industry, and perhaps we could relook at it from the NMTA as the big umbrella organization, like the Big Grange or whatever, see if there's any other kind of risk pools that we can get for, just like what Joe said, you know, a guy that comes in here for summer and wants to get, you know, some work in when the weather can get boats worked on, see if they can do something like that. But I think we need to explore it.
Well, I think the other thing we kind of along the same lines is maybe we start with the people that are registered with the yard, the marine trades that are registered, that have business licenses. You know, how many of them have insurance? You know, it could be all of them, it could be 90% of them. So how many are we actually talking about? You know, it could be that there's only half a dozen people out there really that don't have insurance. And then what kind of work are they doing, you know, kind of better gauge the actual risk out here. And, you know, this morning, a couple of times, was mentioned the agreement of 2007. There was no 2007 agreement. What happened was the commission, after a similar session to what we had this morning, the commissioner just walked away from the issue and didn't talk about it anymore. And we never did anything. So, which is fine. That's always an option.
Silence is an action.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, I think, like, Joe, what it makes me think, too, is, I mean, I'm thinking about ideas. Like, I wonder if BTMTA could establish a minimum rate that everybody has to charge. You can't be undercutting bombs, you know, in terms of... And I think the bigger concern I would have, too, is, you know... Okay, so we lose an independent contractor. If we lose you, we lose this many jobs. And so that concerns me as well. I mean, I would hate for guys like you to not be able to do what you're doing because you're getting undercut.
Well, there were lots of times in the first 5 years where I lost jobs that I desperately needed.
Right.
Because of that situation. And I seriously considered just closing her down and throwing everything in a van, you know. But at the same time, I would comfortably say there's over 100 boats a year that specifically haul out to come to Bums. And so that does have an impact on the port also. But at the same time, I really want to see an option found for these people because they're invaluable for the boat yard at the same time.
Yeah.
You know, but it just, I mean, that may actually somewhat weed out some of the people that aren't as serious about becoming a viable business, you know, which I would rather compete against people that want to be me in 10 years than people that just are here to get what they can get while they're here. You know, I mean, that may also help, like I say, just weed out some of the people that are more serious about doing this for a living as opposed to doing it to make money, you know.
And there's no way we, you know, being this big of a yard and totally open, I, you know, physical barriers, fences and gates, we don't have the staff to, you know, looking over everybody's shoulder and all the other yards, you know, have a gate.
You know, and I do think to a certain extent, like it or not, the days of the funky boatyard are coming back. And times change. You know, it's just how it is. And it's a tighter society now, and everybody needs to kind of CYA more than they did before. And, you know, I just think that this could become a real pain in the butt issue unless we can figure out something fairly quickly and get everybody on board. But even though there's the changes may hurt some people, growing, I mean, I pay plenty of money in insurance every year, and I know what I pay, and it's not cheap. But that's part of me becoming a business as opposed to becoming Joe in a band. You know, that's just part of what I have to take on. That's part of the deal.
Bill?
So, are there regulations or rules now that require that people that work on work property register to report? That might be a...
Only our leaseholders.
No, we have tailgater registration too.
Oh, we have registration, but not insurance report. Well, you've got to show with proof of...
Yeah, so maybe, I mean, as a first step, I don't know, there's some sort of credential, like a card that the harbor master writes on saying that, you know, blah, blah, blah is going to be here and they're going to leave, kind of, in this time frame, so you know who's here and who's not here. That's
the problem, you know. The honest people, it's like gun registration.
Well, right.
You know, the honest people do it, the illegal don't do it.
But that means that, you know, somebody walking around, some port staff walking around the boatyard that sees a new face and asks them to see the card.
There's one huge exemption that's a problem, and that's that we allow crews to do work on their boats, which I don't want to stop. But as long as you let a fishing boat come in with a crew of 20 guys working on that boat, you have no control.
Yeah, we don't know whether that really is true.
A lot of that happens. There's six crew members, but there's 15 guys working on the boat,
right.
And their crew.
We know that happens, but
yeah, right.
So, it's impossible for us to monitor that. And
you're talking about going out to an insurance company to get more insurance to cover these kind of third-party contractors, and it's going to end up back in the lease lessors, out of the lessor's pocket, one way or other. It comes out of either the tax base or the tenant's pockets. It's kind of the wrong side of the slope to be working, it seems like. If at some point you could do something like, if you're here and you don't have insurance, then you pay a fee to work on port property.
One of the ideas that I had, that we talked about in senior staff, is having a different rate structure. If you use a certified marine trade who's got insurance and business license, you get this rate. If you use Joe Blow from the street, this is the rate you're going to pay, and that could be a pretty substantial.
Yeah, that's what the boat owner pays.
So, I mean, that might be another incentivized statement to do more of that.
Lots to talk about.
Any other comments? My comment is that the Wooden Bow Festival was a lot of fun. I spent 3 hours at the booth and had a great time. I wasn't scared anymore because I actually know the answers to some questions now. And with that, we'll go ahead and adjourn this meeting. And the next meeting will be September the 24th at 5:30 right here.